Okay, so today is Friday, the 14th of December, 2018, the 6th of Teves, Tavshinayin Tes, and we are going to attempt to finish off some odds and ends from Perek Yud Aleph here. A bunch of different things are going to be thrown in. So first of all, we have the story of Eldad and Medad, which we didn't really talk about so much yesterday, but Moshe calls everybody together. And he surrounds them around the oil. So Hashem comes down in the Shechina and talks to them. And they are connected to that spirit. And he gives to those 70 people, and they have the spirit, and they inherit, and they have this nevuah, and it sounds like they don't have any more nevuah. I mean, that's it. I mean, that was the time that they gained prophecy. That was their experience. And then there remain two people in the camp, and the spirit rested upon them. They didn't leave their camps, and they had a nevuah in the camp. So a nar comes, who the nar, by the way, Rashi says is Gershon. Sushkam says, because I don't know who else would it be. Somebody who's around, he wants. We don't know more, just that he was Yosha's oldest son, so it makes most sense that it would be him. But Hanar sounds like it's somebody that we know, right? The Nar means it's somebody that we already recognize. So Rashi says, okay, so it must be Gershom. Vayigid l'Moshe vayomar Eldad u'Medad, and it come and they're having a prophecy in the camp. Vayan Yeshua ben Nun mishreis Moshem b'chorav vayomar. So Yeshua ben Nun says, "Ani Moshe kalem, we should incarcerate them. We should go get them." Vayomer lo Moshe. Moshe says, "I'm a kani atali mi itein kol am Hashem neviim ki itein Hashem es v'rucha aleihem." And Moshe says to him, "You think I'm jealous, right? Mi itein, who gives to all of the nation of Hashem prophecy? Ki itein Hashem es v'rucha aleihem, that Hashem has placed His ruach, Hashem has placed His spirit upon them." Okay, and then we have the story with the Slavwa.
What's going on here? What exactly? I mean, we had the 70.
So 70 people were gathered,
okay.
two people, and they have a nevuah.
It
sounds like to help Moshe. That was the discussion we had yesterday that they were going. They're like Moshe was a candle, and they were going to grow from Moshe, and Moshe wasn't going to lose. And then all of a sudden, these two guys are having a nevuah in the camp. So Gershom comes, reports it. These two guys are prophesizing in the camp. Yeshua turns to Moshe and says, "Let's go get them. You know, well, I'll put them in jail." And Moshe says, "No, it's okay." That's the end of the story, okay. Right?
There are 12 tribes. 70.
Right. Right. So
72 would have been 6 from each tribe.
Good. So we have a problem, right? So there is a problem which the Gemara points out and the Ramban points out. The Gemara points out. Well, first of all, what was their issue? What was the challenge about these people who were prophesizing in the camp? So that's where the Ramban steps in and says there is a halacha that is in Sanhedrin as well as other places. We covered it somewhat recently in the Shulchan Aruch Shir. And that is that a person is not allowed to paskin in front of the Gadol Ador or paskin in front of their Rebbe. So that's what they're guilty. Just as one is not allowed to prophesize in front of the Rebbe, paskin in front of the Rebbe, they're also not allowed to prophesize in front of the Rebbe. And that was their problem. So comes Yeshua and says, all right, well, we got to go take care of them because they're violating the din. It says Befeirush in Shulchan Aruch, right? Reish Mem Beis or Gimel, right? That they're not allowed to do this. To which Moshe responds by saying, no, it's okay. So what's Moshe doing by saying it's okay? So he's doing the action of Mechila, right? He's saying, no, it's okay. I'm being mochel on my kavod. Hence, they are now alleviated from their punishment. That seems to be the Ramban's technical understanding as to what's going on. But there is, as you can probably sense, there's a little bit more going on here than there was a challenge and Moshe is being mochel, Moshe is forgiving on his honor. So there is Nechama Leibowitz. I don't think we've quoted her so much. I should have more. I really remember today that I actually have her book on Bamidbar, Studies in the Bamidbar. We've talked about Nechama Leibowitz before. We know who she is somewhat.
Yes.
We'll have to save it for another time when we have more time to talk about her more, but we've recognized the name at least.
Yeah, what's your name?
Nechama Leibowitz. Nechama Leibowitz lived in the last century. She passed away, I think when I was in high school, because I think I remember my rebbe talking about her. She taught Tanakh in Israel for many years and ran sort of a teaching institute as well in the Tzioni Dati Lumi world. So she is recognized as one of the great Tanakh experts of the last century, with the knowledge of Torah Shabbat, totally in the totally considered a Yiri Shamayim, etc., all of those types of things. So there is, she did two things. One is she put out these things called studies that she sent out every week. I forget the name of them. Gilyonos. What?
Not the one kidding.
Yeah, she passed away about 20, 25 years ago or so. She was pretty old. You can find pictures of her. She looked pretty old. But I have teachers that studied by her. Okay, so she put out these things, Gilyonos, which she mailed all over the world. That and with questions, so people would actually answer the questions and mail them back to her, and she would send them back graded. Like that was her thing. So she had hundreds of people around the world, thousands of people. She was mailing these things out to. Ultimately, they were collected in a book called Studies the Studies series, which appear on every book of Chumash. Okay, so she has a piece on this story here. So where she quotes from the Akedas Yitzchak. Akedas Yitzchak, I believe, is a commentary on Rashi. It's not on the page, and I don't have a copy. So, but she quotes from the Akedas Yitzchak. What changed within Moshe? Now, we already had this 15 psukim earlier. This is a response to Moshe saying earlier, "I've had enough. If you're going to destroy the Jewish people, please destroy me." Right. So, and then we had a discussion about what exactly was he saying. He's saying, "You're going to destroy them. I'm going to destroy them." But that was the so. But either way, it says that Akedas Yitzchak, whoa, what happened to the guy that in Parshas Kitisa was ready to put his name down in order to make sure that Bnei Yisrael was not going to be destroyed? Where did things change? Where did things change along the way? So the truth is, where things changed along the way, she doesn't really get into. Maybe we'll get into that shortly from a different book. But she does. But he does point out that, okay, so what was the repercussions? Was Moshe punished for him saying, "I want to give up leadership of these people, take me now"? Was he punished? The answer is no. He's not punished. Hashem actually listens to him. Hashem says, okay, I'm going to set up these other people, and these other people are now going to be those that are going to help you out. Moshe says, I can't bear the burden by myself. Hashem says, okay, fine. I'll find you a bunch of assistants that are then going to help you up. She points out this is reminiscent of Bnei Yisrael turning to Shmuel and telling Shmuel, we need a king, to which it's recognized as being the wrong request. Why that is, we'll get to it in the springtime or summertime when we get into it in our Navi Shirim. But it's recognized as a wrong request, and what's the repercussions? They get a king, right? So sometimes these kinds of requests are put out there, and they are responded to by having them fulfilled. But the question then she turns around and says, well, okay, now how are they going to be regarded, right? These new people, these ones are going to be the assistants. What's going to be their role? How is Moshe going to respond to them? So there is a Gemara in Maseches Sanhedrin where this story is developed somewhat, and it says, why are these two people? What are these two people doing? The kind of people are in, two people are out. So we pointed out that, well, if you do the math, you got a little bit of a problem because you have 12 tribes. Each one's going to want to have equal representation, you're going to run into some mathematical issues. But if you take 6 from each tribe, it's going to be 72, and if you take 5 from each tribe, you're only going to have 60. So you take 6 from each tribe, and then you have 2 extra. So Moshe's like, great. How am I? Those people that are going to have less representation, right, aren't going to be very happy. So what am I? So Moshe has this idea. Moshe says, okay. So he writes out 72. He takes 72 stones. Writes on 70 of them Navi or Zakein or something. He writes Zakein on 70 of them, and the other two he writes nothing, right? And then he goes and tells them by Shnayim Hinichu Chalak, and two of them he left blank. So he then mixes them all up together, and Moshe says to them as they come in, Bo Talu, come and take, right? Pitakechem, come and take your lots. Kol Misha Allah Biyadu Zakein Amar Kfar Kitchach Hashemayim. Anybody who picks up a Zakein lot, Hashem, he says to them, Hashem has sanctified you. Mishael biyadu chalak amar, and somebody who gets a blank one, a makam lo chafitz b'cha anima esel lach. Moshe looks at them and says, look, it's you and God. I have nothing to do with this, right? Take it up with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, and Then he could. Now the way she reads this Gemara is it's a machlokas. I'm not even sure it's a machlokas because a couple lines later it quotes back and then it continues. It takes a little bit of a break and then it says, "So Rabbi Shimon says, what happened? These guys stayed in the camp. Why? Bishasha Amr lo Kadosh Baruch Hu Moshe Espar Li Shivimish Amru Eldad Umedad Eldad Umedad say to each other, Ein Anruim Lo Osangulo. We are not befitting of that amount of godless. So Amr Kadosh Baruch Hu Hol Miatcham Atzmachem because you humbled yourself. Harini Mosif Gedula Al Gedula Eschem. I'm going to have great. Onto your greatness, umagadula hosif lachem. What greatness did he add to them? Shanaviim kulam nisnavu upasku, vehem nisnavu velo pasku. All the other prophets, the other 70 had their prop. We don't have a recording of any of them not getting. So those 70 had nevuah and kfartik. That was it. They didn't have any nevuah again. And those guys had continuous nevuah. They had continuous prophecy. What prophecy did they have? And that's where things get a little controversial. One is, the first possibility is that Moshe died, in which case, now we understand why Yeshua is not very happy about that, and Yeshua is ready to get after them. Another opinion is that the Slav is coming, and they said, Alei Slav, the Slav is coming. And the third possibility is that they're talking about Gog u'Magog, right? So now, comes along, so what is Moshe's response when he finds out about this? Even according to the possibility that it's that in the prophecy that he is going to die, his response is, okay, right? Nevuah should not be secluded to me alone. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with them having these different nevuahs than me. To which her suggestion is, which in fact he quotes from Rav Hirsch, that Rav Hirsch says that we see that there's no monopoly on spiritual leadership. Hashem, the spiritual power is given by Hashem and not the particular of any particular person, but everybody has the same opportunity to get spiritual greatness. In which case Moshe's response is demonstrating that his request about I need help is really lishma. Right? The fact that Moshe didn't get upset at his loss of power, the fact that Moshe is okay, that there's other people that are rising to spiritual heights along with him, demonstrates that Moshe was okay the entire time. That Moshe really meant it, saying, "I really need help in order to provide for these people," and I'm okay with the additional people amongst us that are having prophecy like me. Now, I don't know if we have any indication of them getting prophecy later on as well. I don't know if we know what that is or what that isn't. But anyways, the fact that Moshe is okay with others getting prophecy along with him demonstrates that he was lishma, and therefore he was listened to. I mean, that therefore Hashem is like, okay, I'm not going to take it out on Moshe that he had that type of request. They definitely had a problem. He had in kam kamosha, lo kam kisrael kamosha od navi umabid estemunaso.
That's not exactly prophecy. That's
it is. No. Lo kam kisrael kamosha od navi. What do you think prophecy is? What is it?
Hashem telling him about the future when he's talking to him?
Sure.
Or he's giving him instructions?
Yeah, you know, I think he tells him everything, I think. I don't know. I mean, not everything. We know in Parshas Ki Tisa they didn't tell him everything. He only saw the back. He didn't see the front. But he's considered the greatest prophet that ever lived.
Yeah, but I always interpreted it as because he spoke to Hashem face to face, so to speak. But
he did. But I think that's a level above. I don't think that's a level below.
If he got all this prophecy, then why is he so nervous all the time? Why is he so stressful? I mean, Hashem, you know.
Well, also, I'm not sure we know. First of all, we don't know. We don't know what exactly he knew. We know he was told about the future. We don't necessarily know everything that he knew. What else was he nervous about? He was nervous about the suffering of the Jewish people from the very first nevuah that he had. It showed up this week as well when he said, "Take someone else but me. If I find another Navi but me." And the Medrash explains that he was saying that I'm willing to do this, but it's going to lead to a lot of suffering throughout our history. Right? Just take the person, Misha Asid Sha'ata, take the person who you're in the future going to call upon. All right. So there is. So.
By the way, Nechama Leibowitz died in 1997.
Okay.
95.
Whoa.
95. Okay.
92.
That was right. It was when I was in high school. She was in Berlin with that whole chevra, with the Lubavitcher Rebbe and with the Rav and with Rav Futner. She was in that. I don't know if they were in the same class. I believe they did. Rav Futner, I'm not sure, knew them, but the other three, they all knew each other, I believe.
Yeah,
Yeah. Only in short time, because the Nazis came in late 30s.
I
think you're talking about.
They were in Berlin.
Till 32, I think.
Till 32? Okay. Yeah. Something like that. I have it at home, what they,
the years were. So remember, you got married 28 years after his father got out of prison.
Okay. All right. Anyways, so let's. Okay. So there is a. So what is? But how do you explain Moshe's change? I mean, what was the change that Moshe had from the time of the Chet HaEgel to the time now? So Rav Moshe Lichtenstein. Moshe Lichtenstein is the son of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. I don't know if he's now officially the Rosh Hashiva of Gush or not, whatever. But he's in that. That Moshe is ready to defend himself for the Jewish people after the Chet HaEgel. He's ready to say, if you're going to take these people out, take me out of the, I don't want to be listed, etc. Here he's just saying, listen, you got to kill them, but I just don't want to see it.
where is he saying that?
That's earlier. That's in the Pasuk.
Oh, my God. So I don't see the evil, so I don't see my evil?
Yeah.
It sounds like Hagar.
Moshe is saying, why are you punished me by having these responsibilities? And then Pasuk Tesvav, right? Vim kacha es asaseli hargini na harok imatsasi femi nechav alarim berasir. Right? Kill me before I see the evil you're going to do to them. And he's not really defending them. So what is the so how does one explain that change? So Moshe Lichtenstein has Rav Moshe Lichtenstein has there is a book out in English. If anybody ever wants to read a biography of Moshe Rabbeinu, here it is, Moshe, envoy of God, envoy of his people, where he traces. I think it's a lot of shirim that he how he gave over the course of many years about Moshe Rabbeinu and said, hey, he could put this all together into one long book, and that's what he has here. So I think it's also available in Hebrew as well. So they. So what is the difference between now and then? And he suggests that then, meaning in Parshas Shmos, where as we're going through Parshas Beshalach, we enter straight from Parshas Beshalach into Matan Torah. Even though Parshas Beshalach had all of these complaints that we see in this parsha, there's a lot of parallels between this parak and Parshas Beshalach, where they had various complaints there. So what is the difference between them? So he suggests that in Parshas Beshalach, these people are going out, they leave slavery, they're following Moshe, now they're out in the middle of the desert. Like, okay, how exactly are we going to eat tomorrow? How exactly are we going to drink tomorrow? They were significant concerns that they had. As opposed to now, what was their concern? Their concern wasn't that they were not going to eat. Their concern was what they were going to eat. That we're tired of this particular food. We're tired of this particular, we want something a little more fancy. So that already is a major distinction. In addition to that, even the story of the Chet HaEgel itself, right? The Chet HaEgel, what brought it about? What brought it about was their fear of how are we going to continue on in the desert? I mean, how are we going to survive? How are we going to survive? And then he connects, however, he connects this parak to the, not the next parak, well, the next parak itself has some challenges, but the parak after is the sin of the Meraglim. So what does he suggest is the sin of the Meraglim at this point? The sin of the Meraglim was a fear of the Jewish people, right? Sometimes we're trained to think about it as people, they wanted to stay in the desert rather than go into the land of Israel, rather than encounter the challenge of leading physical existence, we'll stay out here where the bread, where the food is free and the drink is free and we don't have to worry about laundry and all that kind of stuff. They weren't ready to take that on. He goes even further and says, no. The desert was a religious experience, which they were getting a little tired of, evidenced by the fact that they ran away from Har Sinai, right? That we had that in the last Perek, about them running away from Har Sinai. Beyond that, so go into Eretz Yisrael. Well, what's Eretz Yisrael going to be? Eretz Yisrael is going to be even tougher. That's going to be a spiritual existence while having to maintain physical lives. That's even rougher. Where are they going to be able to avoid that? If they go back to Egypt. He goes even further. They want to go back to Egypt because they're having difficulty with this spiritual existence. If that's the case, Moshe is like, well, that's their mission. Right? They're not going to be able to. I understand if they recognize that they have a spiritual mission, and in order to achieve their spiritual mission, they need to be able to eat along the way. I understand that, and I could fight for them on that challenge. That's a legitimate fear. But if it's, we don't want the spiritual mission either, we just want to go back to Egypt and eat cucumbers and melons, So Moshe's like, I don't need a part of this. And that's why Hashem is angry in Parshas Baal Luzcha as opposed to seemingly okay with it back in Parshas B'Shalach. What? No, he's not angry at Moshe. He's angry at the Jewish people. He said he puts plagues upon them, and the people get upset. They come back, and Moshe's got a daven.
So Moshe lets him invent his anger.
Yeah. Okay. Another issue that we another odds and ends that we need to fill in.
I don't know that if he actually changed. It might just be using a different tactic because he's in the first part. He's saying, "Take my name out of the Torah, like erase my name from the Torah." And here he's saying, "This is going to be then kill me, so I don't have to see it." In both cases, he's sacrificing. He's willing to sacrifice himself for the sake of the Jewish people. This is a little bit more.
This kind of somewhat a presumptuous conviviality of his creator, for who would say his earthly sovereign, right? Take your appointment in office in which I have no desire, all the more so in the case of the sovereign creator. There he didn't say, take it away from me. He says, if you're going to destroy them, I don't want to be, you can't include me. Right? It wasn't, erase me from the Torah. It wasn't, I don't want to be associated with them. It was, you have no right to me if you're not going to keep them alive.
Right.
Here he's saying, take me out.
Isn't it the same thing? Not as overtly.
Okay, there he was doing it to defend the Jewish people. Here he wasn't. I think that's clearly a difference in what he's emphasizing.
Remember Hagar, Ishmael? I don't want to see him die.
Yes, okay. All right, so another point that we want to knock off here is with regards to the Slav issue. So first of all, just one thing that I remember learning, it was piled up really high, right? They had to wade through it. So it's not exactly what it is. The Pasuk goes, not really what it is. The Pasuk Yud Aleph is, V'ruch nesam meis Hashem v'yagash chavim min ha'aretz, that the wind blew and the Slav came out, by toshal machaneh kederach yam, and they came across the land, kederach yom ko, on that day, uvederach yom ko, right? Sevivo samachaneh, around the camp, uchamasayim al pnei ha'aretz. What does that mean? Two amos above the ground, right? So that's where the idea come from. Oh, it's up to their waist. But where did I see that?
Where are you?
In Pasuk Lamed Aleph in 31. But if you look at Rashi, Rashi says it's not that they were piled up to 31. Porachos begova, they flew at a height of two amos above the ground, actually connected libu shaladam, so that they are opposite the heart of a person. Why? That they'll be able to grab them easily. So these Slavs all flew across their bodies, and they just grabbed them, right? They didn't have to raise their hand, or they didn't have to bend down. Zipsi Chum adds in, right, what's bothering Rashi? Why does he have to say that they're flying around at that height as opposed to piled up? It says, if they were just piled up one upon another, the bottoms are all going to die. Right? Bottoms are all going to die. It only in order to maintain that they were all still alive, so Rashi has to claim that they were flying around at that relatively low height, so that B'nai Yisrael would be able to grab them. Okay. One more thought over the course of this parsha. Go back to Pasuk Hey. Yudal Pasuk Hey. So Pasuk Hey there says, Zacharnu es hadaga asher nochab mitzrayim chinam. We remember the fish that we ate, and the kishuim, and the avatichim, and the chatzir, and the betzalim, and the shumim. Remember the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, and the garlic. Says Rashi. Rashi later on in Pasuk Yud, commenting upon this whole parsha, says that they were so upset and they went back and they cried to their families. Says Rashi, mishpachos nesavim ubochim, that the families got together and cried. The farsim tarumas begiloi, right? They publicized their complaints. Rabu Senu Amru, the Mishpachosav, amongst their families, Al Iski Mishpachosav, Al Arayos Hanesaros Lahem. That they were crying about the Arayos, they were complaining about the forbidden relationships that are now going to be imposed upon them. Now that they left Sinai, right? Moshe Rabbeinu says, right, good news is, I got down to 10 commandments, bad news is, Arayos are still in. So the people are upset about the Arayos, the people are upset about the forbidden relationships that are upon them. So Yaakov Kamenetsky has a major yeso, which he then extends a bunch of other places, which he lists a bunch of other places, but this is ground zero for this idea. He says, where did that come from? How is that pshat in the pasuk? That Rashi is saying they're complaining about their families. Rashi wants to only explain pshat. And not only is this not pshat, pshat is that they're complaining about the food. And beyond that, it makes the Jews look bad, right? Why is this being added in by Rashi? It said, where does Chazal get off putting words in their mouth that they never actually said? And what was lacking about their complaint that Chazal has to go out and search for tainas on their behalf, search for more complaints, right? The complaints in the Torah are good enough. So he explains about near shekhan yerdu chazal lo make nefesh adam, that chazal could go into the depths of man. That people have inner strength which are working within them and they don't even feel. It's like the heart or like the kidneys, that they're there, we know that they exist within us, but we don't necessarily feel them working on a regular basis. And he explains that it doesn't make sense that it doesn't make sense that they were complaining about cucumbers and garlic when they can make the mun taste however they wanted, right? Even though we got into earlier this week what that means. But whatever, they can make the mun taste however they wanted, right? Why would they be complaining about that? It's going to lead to all this disaster. That even though themselves were complaining about garlic and the onions, which they didn't have. Their inner strength had a different taina, had a different complaint. What was that about? Iske Arayos, the complaint about the Arayos, and that's right. Understand this yisod very well. Right? What's the question? The question is, right? They're complaining about cucumbers, and Chazal comes along and says they're complaining about Arayos. They're complaining about forbidden relationships that they're now forbidden. Right? Where do we get that from? He says just because that's really going on underneath them, and they might not have even realized that. That's what we call the subconscious. That's what we call the ego, right? Yeah. Which one's which? That was the superego is good. The ego is bad.
The ego's logical.
Or the id?
Id.
They're complaining about the id, right? It's in the id. They don't necessarily recognize what's going on inside of them. It says Rav Yaakov, but that's what Rashi's driving at. Rashi's driving at that they said it was about this, but in their guts it was about that. And if you ask them, they might not even realize that. But if you sit them down on a couch for 6 months, so then maybe they'd come around and realize that. And just to connect it to this week's Parsha, Rav Yaakov continues on and says, not continues, but in Parsha's Vayigash, in the very first pasuk in this week's Parsha, so Rashi says, right? We can't be scared of you. Ki kamochik, you are to us like Paro. Yeah, he says to him. So Rashi gives four pshatim as to what he means. You're to us like Paro. The first pshat is, you're to us like Paro, that we're afraid of you, right? You have power to us. You have a lot of power, so you're to us. And then he gives three other explanations that all have to do with Yehuda fighting against him. With Yehuda coming up and saying that, you know, just as Paro got Saras once upon a time when he took one of our people captive, my grandmother, right? So to you, my great grandmother, right? So to you're going to have Saras as you take one of our people captive, meaning Yamin. And he has two other pshatim along those lines as well. So Rav Yaakov says, what's going on here, right? The pshat is clear like the first explanation. And the other three explanations that Rashi gives is totally against the first explanation, right? It's the opposite effect. And the first explanation is that he's afraid of him. And the second explanation, a third and fourth explanation are that we're not afraid of you. So how does pshat work with both ways? The Rav Yaakov says that one is the powerful frontline argument, and the other ones are the underlying argument, and all are true. All are correct. Chazal understands what's going on inside of people even better than people understand themselves. He's just said sometimes takes a little bit of understanding in order to get down, in order to figure out what's actually there. All right, we'll stop here. Have a good Shabbos. And Bruce, we have your permission for next week. We'll move on to the next parak. Okay.
Why did Joshua say, let's incarcerate them? And